so hard. Thank
you for coming tonight. My husband and I actually met Elizabeth officially and had a chance to sit down with her and talk to her about what the plans were and the next stuff, which is why she's here tonight. I think one of the reasons I really like Elizabeth is we need more women in office. She is a woman that those of us that are on the farm team can really look up to and admire. There are some that run that make it a lot harder for us down at the bottom. But Elizabeth has a very good example for Lexington and to follow. And I know she's been involved in a lot of things in Washington, D.C. She's probably sharing a little bit about that. But I'm just really happy to have you here. And
thank you. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Well, it's really my great pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you asked me to come, Michelle and Chris. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and Carl, you as well. I just got done doing something that was really one of the most amazing events of my life, and that was running for U.S. Senate. And it was a remarkable, remarkable experience. You know, we have a beautiful state. And we really do. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to leave. I would like to stay here. Sometimes I think we feel a little bit fish out of water as conservatives here, but I don't think it's quite really as bad as we might think it is after the last election. I want to talk to you a little bit about my background, how I got involved in this thing called elected politics, and where I'm hoping to see us go as a party. Just a little bit about my background. I have dual degrees in economics and political science from UCLA. And I spent a little bit of time doing international. I spent some time at Cambridge University doing issues related to China and the Middle East. I never expected to actually use the political science end of it. I have been very blessed to have had two careers. My first career was at IBM. I did cost and financial management for IBM US. And this is a little nerdy, a little accounting. Very, very much a numbers gig, but I really enjoyed it, and it was very big numbers. What I did was I looked at various business units across IBM and looked at ways, compared them, and looked at ways to make them more efficient, and held them accountable up against each other. This is really business 101. You're always looking for best practices and ways to be more efficient. And I'm going to get to, in a minute, what I learned about our federal government and really their lack of having business units kind of comparative analysis. My second career I was drafted into. Never would have thought I'd end up there. My son, who is now 20 years old, was diagnosed with autism when he was 4. And there was very, very little known about it at the time. And I became very involved in learning more about it and becoming an advocate for those who suffer with autism. Got involved with looking at legislation. I've done several different pieces of federal legislation over a period of time, working with families, working with grassroots, if you will, activists, parents who are looking for a better life for their kids. I did the Children's Health Act of 2000 and the Combating Autism Act of 2006. And I've done bills in 30 different states across the country. So I'm very familiar with the legislative process. Never, ever thought I'd run for office. But something happened. I was vice president of government relations at Autism Speaks. And we had an election in Barack Obama, and an all-Democratic Congress came to town in 2009. And there was a series of events in about 6 months of the first part of 2009 that convinced me that I needed to do something personally. I was going to throw my hat into the ring. The first thing was the stimulus. Remember the March of 2009, that stimulus? Very disconcerting for someone like me who'd been back working on issues relative to funding, where we're trying to do very responsible, thought out, again, with comparative analysis, what's the best track for these programs. And all of a sudden, we had a new administration that was just handing out money. I mean, in a very, to be honest with you, very not thoughtful way. I mean, we had $170 billion that really was just kind of thrown out there with this idea that it would somehow lift the economy. And of course, we all now know that didn't happen. But the second thing that happened, and this was the trigger event for me, my aha moment. You've all had those where your life just changes forever. And that was Obamacare.
The healthcare is my area of expertise. It's what I've been working on for 15 years, mostly related to those who are disabled who are unable to care for themselves. When I saw what was starting to come together with Obamacare, I was concerned. As it developed, that concern became really, almost panic. The bill itself, especially when it was in the crafting stage, it didn't look good at every level. But then when it finally passed and we actually saw what was coming out, well, by then I said I'm running for Congress, because this legislation, I really do believe, if we don't continue the efforts to roll it back, will mark the end of our healthcare system as we know it in this country. I'm not trying to be alarmist, but this is a viewpoint that I believe was grounded in facts back in 2009, and every day that goes by, we have more and more evidence that this is actually coming to pass. You know, our healthcare system, there was a reason that it was the premier system in the world, and that's because we have had free market forces present, not dominant, but present. Obamacare takes what was a challenged healthcare system. When I was talking to the gentleman in the back a few minutes ago about this, it had significant challenges, but it took a challenged system and made it 100 times worse. So it was my citizen moment. I just said, that's it. I got to get involved. If this is the best legislation that our government can come up with, then I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, because I've been working on issues of Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, as they relate to our tax code for years. And I feel now that we are still not addressing the underlying problems with our system. And I can talk about healthcare forever, so I'll just move on now. But it's still a big concern of mine. And interestingly enough, other people are starting to notice that there's a problem with it, right? Yeah, we tried to tell them. And look, I still hope that we can roll back some of the issues, and we'll be able to move forward in a real healthcare reform, which Obamacare does not use there. So I ran for Congress first when I left my position at Autism Speaks, learned how to be a candidate. By the way, thank you, Michelle. I appreciate your kind words. There's nothing about me that's typical in terms of the normal process. You might have noticed that politicians have a couple of different tracks. They might come up through the ranks and start at city council and go to assembly and you know, work your way up, so to speak. Then we also have folks who come in and, frankly, are able to write a very big check, and they can kind of proclaim that they are arrived and they are a candidate. I am neither of those. I'm someone who spent my last 15 years, in the nonprofit arena, working on issues that affect the disabled. And clearly, by the way, if you're going to run for U.S. Senate, I recommend that you don't come from the nonprofit arena. You know, it doesn't. When you're running for U.S. Senate, they really like you to be able to write that $10 million check. You know, my background is in the service industry. That's what I know. It's what I've done. And what I can tell you is I thank the people of, whether it's this congressional district, California, or the country, they are hungry for individuals who are service-oriented and who are looking to go back to Washington to do something, and not just to be somebody. We have a lot of that. There's no shortage of folks who would like to, you know, have a pin on their lapel and be somebody. The reason I got involved, the reason I ran initially, was because I wanted to go back to Washington to do something. I have very specific ideas about how we can roll back some of the damage from Obamacare, fix the underlying problems with our tax code. And by the way, let me just as an aside, we can't fix what's wrong with our economy and our healthcare system without fixing our tax code. We have tremendous problems at work there. I think it's priority one. And I want to be back there. I'm a problem solver. I'm not really a politician. I'm a problem solver. I'm someone who's taken issues, again, relative to the disability community and been able to make great progress for these families. So let me just spend a second talking about my second run, which was for U.S. Senate. As you may or may not know, I prevailed over 22 other individuals in the primary to run for U.S. Senate. That was quite an experience. If you ever want to, you know, really really, really do something fun, run in a 22-way race, Michelle. it's unfortunate that Diane Feinstein didn't really want to talk about the issues. She just, you know, the issues are just, were just something she really didn't want to deal with. But I had a great opportunity to travel up and down the state, go to every corner of it, and meet families in all different sorts of situations, most of which had never seen Diane Feinstein or Barbara Boxer. So that was also quite disconcerting. We have a beautiful state, an amazing state. I was very fortunate to spend quite a bit of time here, Nina Morning, who, by the way, Nina made it possible for me to run for U.S. Senate. My U.S. Senate campaign was a grassroots campaign. It was a campaign of Republican women, of the Tea Party, of activists, of those who were concerned that we have a conversation in our state about what our U.S. senator would be doing for the next 6 years. And by the way, we never really did get an agenda, other than Diane Feinstein did promise to renew the assault weapons ban legislation. She promised to do that. Well, she followed through on that, didn't she? And she warned us, she told us she was going to do it. That's about it, by the way. So there's really nothing else that she's promised to do. So hopefully that's it. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had prevailed in that race. I really do. But I believe everything happens for a reason, and life puts you on a path. And I'm very excited about the potential, the possibility of running again for U.S. Congress. My desire to serve you is very strong, and I'm very committed to do so. What's most important to me right now is that you all, the people, choose who their representative is going to be. Sounds like a quaint novel idea, right? That not the establishment, not somebody who might have a very big checkbook, but that the people decide who should run and who should represent them. So I'm officially testing the waters, exploring a race here, and I would love to have your input, and I would love to answer your questions. That's really why I'm here tonight. And I want to thank all of you who did vote for me and support me in the U.S. Senate race. I raised $1.2 million, and I like to say it was at $100 at a time. It was a grassroots campaign, and I will forever be grateful for the opportunity, and I hope to be able to have that opportunity again. So with that, I'll let you all decide how much time I have.
Go into the key questions.
Yeah, okay, is that right? Okay.
Thank you.
Questions, anybody?
Yeah, what's your opinion of the Governor Brown proposals for the two tunnels through the Delta?
Well, one of the things that I spent quite a bit of time on, again, when I was running for Senate, was looking at our water problems. So I'm going to talk about it a little bit more globally, if I might. Sometimes I think we just need to make it a little more simple. We have a water problem that's been going on now for decades and has not been resolved. To me, this isn't rocket science. We have the ability to capture more water than we capture, right? We can build additional structures, capture that water. I am not a fan of moving around an already scarce resource. I'm in favor of building and capturing more water. We can do that safely. It's I believe we can and should do it in an environmentally sound and sensitive way. And we should be looking at desalinization. There are 4 water projects that have been on the table now for decades. For decades. These are expansions that could take place and should take place. And if we move to expand our water storage, we're going to be able to serve our water needs. There are, again, I think, individuals who believe we cannot do so in an environmentally sensitive way. I disagree. I think we absolutely can. Technology is advanced. We can do a lot of things that, in an environmentally sensitive way that might have been difficult 2 decades ago. But we've gotten better at it, and we need to take advantage of it. Sir.
Basic question, where is Congressional District 7?
The 7th Congressional District is, of course, we have new lines now, just in the past the Dan Lundgren seat, but of course Elk Grove, that goes all the way down to the Herald area, up through the Rancho Cordova, Folsom, Carmichael, Fair Oaks, up the upper corner is Citrus Heights, and just the art and arcade section of Sacramento. Yeah, exactly, Lundgren's Old Sea. So the most recent Lundgren's Old Sea, right? Remember, we had, I know, it's a little bit confusing. It's a little bit confusing. I have a map. I'd be happy to show it to you. But it's the one that we just, the election that we just died.
Okay.
Yep.
So when you mentioned the capturing the water and storing it, would that mean that you would be open to the Auburn Dam?
I am, first of all, one of the things that I've heard a lot about lately that I don't quite understand is I would like to see us not take down any water storage, water structures, or any dams that are currently keeping us with water until we have alternatives. One of the issues that, again, just from a technology standpoint, that we're not spending enough time on, in my view, is, again, the desalinization. There was a time when there was really a big concern that we could do that in an environmentally sensitive way. I think we can start doing that now. But I'm not familiar exactly with the Auburn Dam. Is it an expansion of the dam?
No, it's been stopped.
It's been the project.
It was a couple of our Congress people's intent to explore that more and get the dam built. So that's when you were talking about water storage.
Right.
That was
why. That's not one of the ones that I have looked at. I will tell you, if you go to my website, which, by the way, I would love for you to do so, it's elizabethemkin.com, mm-hmm. and there's four different structures. Specifically, these are ones that have been on the drafting table for a very long time, and I think that barring, again, having to start a process all over again, I'd like to go with projects that have the best opportunity of having the quickest success, because there's been so much research done already.
I recommend that, like Lynn's talking about, looking at the Auburn Dam.
Yeah.
That is a subject that's been mm-hmm. growing up here in Sacramento
okay,
for
right.
a while.
Okay.
Water.
Are you a water expert?
Yeah.
Well, I'm becoming one.
Excellent. Good.
Isn't there a desalination plant in San Diego area?
There was one, and I'm not sure if it's still operating right now. But there was some concern, again, environmental concerns that I think that we've been able to establish. Again, technology advances. Sometimes one of my frustrations in the Senate race was I didn't find some report things from 30 years ago. You know, things do advance. So I know there were some concerns with the safety of it, but once again, technology is advanced. So there's definitely
happening all over the world.
I know. Well, there's a lot of energy alternatives that are all over the world that, again, we don't seem to really quite have caught up to technological advances. We can do a lot of things more safely than we could 30 years ago.
I have a couple of questions. First one is, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, the junior senator, has been very effective in a short time in the Senate.
Yeah.
And I wonder why you think he's so effective. And also, how is your campaign going to be similar or different than his campaign?
Well, I won't be running for U.S. Senate again this time, so it'll be Congress. Yeah, I had an opportunity to meet Senator Cruz back at the convention in Tampa. And he's, of course, he's an unbelievably dynamic speaker. And he did what I firmly believe in the beginning, and that is he ensured that he had the people's support. I mean, what was most important to Ted Cruz was that the grassroots, the activists, the folks who, on the ground, were in support of his candidacy. He was not the establishment pick in Texas by any stretch of the imagination. I think that he's clearly very articulate, very able to get his point across. And I think that we, you know, Congress is the 80-20 rule at the end of the day. You've got 80% of folks there who are there going to be followers, and you've got 20% that are going to be leaders. Ted Cruz is going to be a leader. It's just like, you all familiar with the 80-20 rule? Right? 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Congress is very much like that. You have, I would say, very generally, about 80% of Congress that's back there, and they follow whatever the leader says, whatever the caucus leader says, whatever the committee leader says. And some of it's because they just aren't experienced. They don't know how Congress works, so they aren't familiar with how to go back there. I think Ted Cruz is going to be in the 20%. I'll tell you right now, I'll absolutely be in the 20%, because you're not going to have to show me where the women's room is. In U.S. Congress. I'm very, very familiar with operationally I have very specific ideas of what I'd like to, where I'd like to serve. I'd like to be on Energy and Commerce, Subcommittee on Health. These are areas, again, of my expertise that I think I can add quite a bit to. The other reason I think that it's important, you know, we were talking, Michelle was talking about women. You know, why is it important to get conservative women into the arena? You know, I've got three kids, you know, one of which is profoundly disabled and it'll need a lifetime of care. I think we have to have conservative women talking to other conservative women and non-conservative women, just women in general, about what we all care about, and that is the best possible life for our kids. And I think somehow, for reasons that escape me, the Democrats have assumed the mantle of compassion when it comes to children and families, and I really fly in the face of that. So I think my way of being effective is going to be different than Ted Cruz's, to be honest with you. I think I can be effective because I can talk about what my view is, how you can be a problem solver, how you can be compassionate towards families and kids, and what we have going on right now with Obamacare and a lot of what's coming out of our bureaucracies aren't compassionate to families and kids. So I think I can draw a little bit different picture now. Yes, sir.
Talking about economics a bit.
Yeah.
We've got a bunch of Keynesians up there.
I know. Didn't work, did it?
No. Definition of Keynesianism just for Texas definition.
Yeah.
So in their youth, they make a short mistake and they use a credit card too much.
Yeah.
They get in trouble. They're 18 right. feet in the financial hole. And they see that and they taught the Keynesianism. So they go and dig it 18
right.
feet deeper.
Right.
Like Mr. Obama?
Right. Okay, so let me talk about, for all the economists in the room, what we saw with the stimulus bill
yes.
was an attempt at Keynesian economics. So mm-hmm. what does that mean for, in case you're not an economist? The idea was, well, it doesn't matter what you do. You just put money into the economy, and like magic, it'll just, everything will start to grow. There'll be growth. Here's the problem with that. The Keynesian models are based on really data that's not really accurate anymore, in my view. We're in a global economy. You can't take our economy, which is now subject to the forces of a global economy, and add to that, at the time, I think it was $14 trillion in debt, is where we were. Have be $14 trillion in debt, be part of a global economy, now take $871 billion and expect Keynesian magic. It just doesn't work that way. And the proof is in the pudding. You know, there was not the economic impact that it was supposed to have. So I think we've hopefully learned that lesson. Sure. He hasn't been talking about it lately, though, has he? Really?
I thought I was told that we have about 154 nations of the world out of 172 approximately that are getting foreign aid called, called foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't fight with us, they don't
mm-hmm.
vote with us. And
yep.
I wonder why we haven't had Republicans addressing
that. So I got three kids. Did you mention that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got three kids, and if I want them to improve their behavior, that there's a behavior problem in any given time, I might either take away a privilege or I might add a privilege, right? But my actions will affect their behavior if I either take away or this privilege or add it back in. So here we have nations around the world, some of which have done things or either not done things lately that are in our country's interest. And in my view, we should make an impression to affect their behavior. Let me give you a great example. Egypt. Okay, when we had the attack on our embassy in Egypt, and it was severely damaged. So what would have been, in my view, a logical response to that? A logical response would have been, call the leadership and say, you know what? Look, I understand. We understand that you've got some issues trying to get your government together. We're going to be suspending support right now until you have things a little bit better order and until you have an opportunity to fix and repair our embassy. Just, you know, we're going to suspend it. We're sure that you will, in very short order, be able to get everything under control. But until then, there's going to be a consequence. Unless we as a country start showing that there's a consequence for bad behavior against our country, why would that need to ever change? Right? If we don't, we've got to do very, very simple things to influence behavior. And, again, mystery to me why that's not happening. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be no more aid for you, ever. we can do things to influence behavior. I should. I think you'll appreciate this. I always think, well, they must know more than we know. There must be just so much more going on behind the scenes, and certainly I hope there is. I mean, I hope there's a justification for what we're continuing to experience in Afghanistan. I'm not 100% comfortable that there is, but
does Congress talk to Congress about it, or is
I don't know. I will tell you that my concern has been, continues to be, with the really lack of willingness. And I'm sure there's lots of different things from both parties, frankly, that are driving this, to really start to address some of these budgetary issues. Ever since the sequester, the across-the-board cuts that was supposed to stop, you know, life as we know it in this country, ever since then, and there was not the huge effect that was threatened that there might be, there's been a really interesting, I think, sort of response to that from the federal government. I mean, I think they're starting to weigh what the potential budget effects would be. I personally believe that we're in an ability to take a little haircut everywhere. We saw it happen without much ill effect. How many of anybody here had their personal budget, family budgets affected in the last several years? Mine's been. I don't know about you, but we had to take an across-the-board cut in every era. So I think it's been good. I don't actually, you know, there's some of the, I think, kind of, I don't know, a little skeptical about some of these things with the air traffic, the FAA. That seemed a little too convenient, but anyway, and very conveniently got fixed. I would like to see a little more aggressive push on both parties to address budget. Here's the problem. And this, again, is one of the reasons I got involved. You really have a Congress, in my view, that is shirking their basic fiduciary responsibility. You would think Congress would offer supervision to our bureaucratic agencies, right? You would think. They actually really don't. The agencies themselves have far too much power, in my view, and aren't subject to Congress. And to me, that's just wrong. The role of Congress is to really act as, and this, again, they have budget authority. That's my basis for this. If you have budget authority for an agency, then you have a responsibility to manage those assets and those activities. And there's been a real lack of willingness to address it. And that's kind of across the board. So anyway, that's kind of a long-winded way of saying I would like to get back there and apply some of those IBM principles that I used when I was analyzing activities there. And, you know, again, I think we can do a lot better almost everywhere, including in our what we do in defense and in foreign aid, both of those.
On the Obamacare that you're talking about, mm-hmm. I think that you have a real strong tool against your opponent, Ami Bera, mm-hmm. to really pound mm-hmm. the Obamacare. I listened to Rush Limbaugh, and he said this week that 42% of the American people think that Obamacare is not the law of the land. So that's a real ignorance mm-hmm. on our voting, yeah. Voters. But the point of Obamacare, the point that you can really aim at your opponent, three things. To repeal Obamacare completely. Don't even try to reform the thing. Repeal it completely. There's three things that we need as American citizens. If you want to reform healthcare, at this point, Obama's ramrodded so many things that people are actually, I think, suffering PTSD from all of his reforms. But if you want to talk about healthcare reform, talk about health savings accounts, tort reform. Most people don't understand what the term tort reform is. It's to reform the legal legislation with the health care. And also, across the state, you could buy health anyway, across the states. Mm-hmm. So those three items, simple. Your opponent would like to have even more extreme health care benefits or whatever. So I don't think that it can be understated enough how much the American people do not want Obamacare.
Well, the numbers, first of all, the numbers are there for just in terms of the popularity, if you will, of Obamacare. It's because we're seeing the effects of it. When you have companies that are moving to exclude spouses from coverage, when you have many people, anybody here experiencing increases in their health care premiums directly yet? Right? I mean, people understand that. You can be all the low information voter you want to be, but if you have to pay more, then you're at this point realizing where that came from. The thing about Obamacare is it truly took what I believe was a healthcare system with big problems. I want to be clear on this. I believe our healthcare system in this country had really serious problems before Obamacare. Yes. Obamacare just took it and made it 1,000 times worse. So now we have to unwind that and then go back to just having a bad problem instead of a catastrophic problem. That's a horrible place to be as a country. But that nonetheless is where we're at. So there's so many different things wrong with Obamacare, but let me address what you just said. Let's just take it all apart completely. Obamacare is such a mess, and there's no better word for it, structurally, just from the statutory language standpoint. When people say, you remember Nancy Pelosi's famous line, you got to read it to know what's in it. Honestly, it's not readable. It's not like you could read it. It is structurally, from a policy standpoint and just from an implementation standpoint, a mess. It was the grandmother, the word you used, I think. Yes, absolutely. And it's an example of someone who just didn't know how to govern, who didn't know how to legislate, honestly. But anyway, so we have to undo it completely, without a doubt. Okay, well then how do you fix it? Look, I know that the mantra you hear a lot from the conservative side is, well, you need to have tort reform, you need to have policies across state lines. That's not enough, in my view. I think we're not talking about the underlying problem with our healthcare system in this country, and that is the federal government's tax code. Okay, now, well, stay with me for a minute. How can that be? 30 to 40 years ago, our federal government, in their infinite wisdom, decided that out of very good intentions, that they would help people get health insurance. So they created a favorable tax code for large companies, encouraging companies to insure their employees. Does anybody else in this room have the same role my husband and I have? We've had it for the 25 years we've been married. One of us, at any given time, needs to work for a large company so that we have health care. Do you either have that rule or do you have kind of thought?
Yes.
Right? Do you know what I mean? Practical. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, well, you can't have both of you be an entrepreneur because how could you possibly afford health care? Okay, there's the problem. If we have a health insurance, doesn't require advertising on TV. Remember the gecko that we have for the auto insurance and life insurance? It's because we don't have a competitive system. The tax treatments towards our large companies have created this bifurcated system where you've got individuals and small businesses dealing with a completely different set of rules than large companies and the ERISA plans, those that govern themselves, that pay for their own systems. We need to fix that. We need to either all be in or get everybody out. And I could talk another 30 minutes about how you might want to make that decision, so I won't. But you got to pick. You need a competitive health insurance marketplace. Health insurance companies aren't in a competitive insurance marketplace, and we don't have market forces. In fact, remember, I'm an economist. Remember, I've been working in healthcare. It's all related.
What about the pharmacies? All the kickbacks that go on there.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues. Like I said, we had bad problems before Obamacare. And you know what? Market forces, and a lot of sunshine, the light of day. I think that also helps quite a bit. Well, I know that time is running short. I want to really thank you so much for having me. Like I said, it's very important to me that you all choose to have me serve you.
One of the things about, again, running for U.S. Senate is I've literally ran in every district in California.
Can you say your website again?
I can't. It's Elizabeth M. Actually, you can get it there many different ways. But ElizabethMKen.com. And it's EMKEN.com. And I have lots of information on the site about where I stand on lots of different issues. And, again, appreciate very much your time.